Hello, everybody. I'm Sophie, and welcome to MILF Talk. Make your life fabulous, where we like to talk about anything from parenting and money issues to sex and dating. I'm a psychologist, life coach, mother of two, and an author now. And I have lovely people in the studio with me here today. My guest today is totally MILFy.
She's super MILFy. Super MILFy. Yes.
She is a marriage and family therapist and board certified art therapist. Her specialties include, but are not limited to, alcohol and drug addiction, parenting, relationships, depression and anxiety, and even foster care and adoption issues. She's written several books and produced several DVDs on art therapy and has her own video podcast called 3 Minute Art Therapy. She's a painter and a mother of two. And look out. She has a second degree black belt.
What?
Yeah, she's a badass.
Oh boy, I'll try not to piss
Ladies
her off.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pamela Hayes.
Woo! Yeah!
All right, thank you.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I know. How often do you get that kind of applause for being a therapist, right?
Yeah,
and
not often.
And in the peanut gallery, as usual, the handsome and charming Todd Anderson, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
You're for looking good. What martial art is your belt in?
It's a mixed martial arts.
Oh.
So it's a combination
So you can kill us in many ways.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's a combination of kickboxing,
what a
taekwondo,
sweet death that would be.
Jiu-jitsu, judo.
So, do you like MMA fight?
Yeah,
you do.
But I don't compete.
That
you don't compete.
Core.
You just.
But I could
spar.
Put you in a headlock and.
I don't.
Make you pass out.
Go ahead, do it right now.
No, there's no need to prove yourself.
Look at those guns.
Yeah, those are serious guns.
Serious guns.
I don't.
Yeah.
No, let's not.
Yeah.
I know, right? But you're not like you're all like feminine and stuff. Still, you're not like.
Yeah, you wouldn't think of it. When
that would be a shocker. Yeah, because you know.
I'm not crossing any lines today.
There you go.
Oh, come on. She's cool.
So, I don't want to take chances, Sophie.
Before we get specific to art therapy, you don't want to take chances with your life.
No, like, not with her and getting hurt.
I don't know. I thought I was MILFy enough for it.
Yeah. Because it could be interesting.
I mean,
that could be like a whole other thing.
Oh, that kind of thing.
Didn't we talk about the minutia of...
Yeah, we did. I think we did. I think you're right. Okay. I hadn't thought of it that way.
A couple episodes ago.
All right, I'll try to piss her off.
Yeah. So... So before we get to pissing her off, I just have to say, you guys have probably heard in the news that Melanie and Antonio have called it quits after 20 years. Melanie Griffith and Antonio Banderas. You heard this?
They have.
I have not been keeping up.
No,
with
I
so,
you know.
Thanks.
You're welcome. No, they've their statement. The reason that I was checking this out is because this is sort of the new trend in statements. You know, we've thoughtfully and consensually decided to finalize our. Almost 20 years of marriage in a loving and friendly manner. It's like sort of another conscious uncoupling.
Uh-huh.
You know?
So they're doing it without lawyers somehow?
I doubt it. But
they have too much money involved.
Yeah.
There have to be lawyers, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there have to be. So, and Robin Thicke and Paula Patton, shocking. I shouldn't say that. I don't know them. That's not really fair of me to say that.
Didn't he just like do a song like, I want you back or whatever to her?
Oh, I don't know.
I think that happened like a couple weeks ago.
Oh.
I don't know. I just read about it.
That's older news, definitely. Their split. But again, it was the we'll always love each other and be best friends. And they've actually been together since he was 14 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's a little early. Yeah. I mean, you know, kudos to them for you know, being together this long and everything. But no, I didn't know about the song.
Apparently he sang a song somewhere saying, I want you back.
Well.
I don't know. I don't know about that. But I haven't heard that Banderas has done that with Melanie Griffith.
No. They had a good run. They were together for 20 years.
They were.
You know?
They were.
But I think it's interesting that, you know, everybody's, I mean, I guess everybody has always kind of tried to say that they're doing this amicably and, you know, probably trying to avoid the nasty press and such.
Yeah.
But I think it's, you know, kind of an interesting concept to maybe look at divorce differently and you know, you can I know the term conscious uncoupling is pretty funny, but
it's ridiculous
it's
is
ridiculous.
What it is.
But the idea being that we together are making this choice and it doesn't have to make us enemies.
Yeah.
Right.
I've found some couples who can remain friends and can still get together with their kids on holidays and
Yeah, sure. But yeah, so I've run in, I've had people who have, you know, I've known people who went to have the amicable divorce, but as soon as lawyers got involved, then that's when it stopped being amicable.
Yeah, it usually happens around the money issues.
Yeah,
the,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not that easy.
That's the difficult part. And I guess for, well, like in this situation, their daughter is 17 years old, you know, and it's probably a little different that you're not dealing with, literally with dealing with as many years of child support and what does it mean and, you know, using the kids to, I want them, you know, 80% of the time because I don't want to pay child support.
Right.
And, you know, they get used as pawns. But I you know, we have Christmas morning together with our kids, my ex and I. We don't get together for weekly dinners or anything like right. that, but my kids don't worry about us being in the same room with each other.
That's nice because my parents still can't be together. They divorced when I was 13, and they couldn't be together for my brother's high school graduation.
Whoa.
They
can't
be in the same room. And it's unfortunate.
No, that is unfortunate. Yeah, that's what actually my next book is actually a divorce book because I think that's so... that's really the tragedy of divorce. Divorce doesn't have to be a tragedy if... You can, you know, be together at your family. There's going to be graduations and holidays and,
absolutely.
You know, holidays that can only happen once. You know, you don't get to do trick-or-treating twice. You don't get to do 4th of July twice. You don't get, you know, these are all things that are going to have to be talked about and negotiated and figured out. And, you know, the school plays and all those things. Like, you know, stress your kid out because you got to end up at back to school night at the same time and... And you can't be in the same room. My kids have friends whose parents just can't be in the same room, and it's very sad.
It is sad, and then also the extended family who were friendly or loved that, you know, sister-in-law or, you know, daughter-in-law or whatever. Like when my brother got divorced, I wanted to remain friends with my sister-in-law because we had a close relationship. And
so did it work out? Were you able to?
For a couple of years.
For a couple of years.
we decided to call each other sister outlaws.
Oh.
You like that?
Oh, that's good.
We were no longer sister-in-laws.
Yeah, I kind of like that. Very interesting. So you're going to coin a new term right now.
That's right.
That's awesome. That happens with friends, too.
That's right. Well, they have to decide who to go with.
Yeah, it's sort of... And I don't know. It's weird. It gets awkward with the friends I had by marriage. You know, and there's less of a reason to get together because suddenly you don't have that glue to.
Yeah. And you have to sort of love the new person that they start dating.
Yeah,
and all
exactly.
That stuff. So, that I don't know how well that worked out in our situation. In some cases, I'd have to think about it. But
I don't think any of my friends really took me into account when they decided to get a divorce.
That was rude.
I know.
That's wrong.
I don't know.
I did actually. I had a couple of friends who were like, wait a minute, I was counting on you to be there.
Yeah.
I'm like, sorry, now I'm going through it too. Too bad. Let's all just cry together. So
everybody's divorce is a surprise to other people.
Yes.
Because they don't see, the relationship is from the inside.
Exactly. Yeah. You can never really know somebody else's relationship. Yeah. You can know them pretty well. You can know each of them individually. But you don't really know what goes on behind closed doors.
You don't.
You don't.
And it can be shocking.
It goes the other way, too. Like people who you can't believe they've stayed married this
That's
long.
That's right. How do they get together?
The ones where it happens in front of the door and you know that it's bullshit all day, every day, and you're like, wow, like how do they do this? Because who knows? Again, you don't know what's going on behind closed doors. Maybe the makeup sex is really good or maybe I don't know.
Denial is powerful.
Or just denial is...
Yeah, denial is powerful.
Yeah. So, you know, you really, really never know. And your parents, your family, they think they know. They're always going to have an opinion. What went wrong? It's like, really, where do I start?
Right.
Like, do you want
but that's the thing about divorce is everybody looks at it as a what went wrong.
Like, one thing went wrong.
It's a failure as opposed to just a change.
I don't think it is.
This has changed. I don't think it is either.
Yeah, I think, you know, relationships work till they don't work.
Yeah.
And... doesn't mean that you have to live together until you die.
Well, right. Yeah, and growing up, I saw a lot of like friends whose parents were in had a terrible relationship, but they weren't divorcing because of the kids, and that messed up their kids,
right?
You know, as much as splitting would have maybe more yeah, given the behavior that the kids
One never knows because, boy, people can they can act pretty shitty after, even shittier after the split. So it's really, really, it's tricky. So let's say before you get a divorce.
How do you?
Let's come back.
Because marriage
is hard.
Let's
come back around and talk about how marriage is hard. But you work with couples. You're, as an art therapist, some people might be surprised that you work with couples and utilize art therapy. So give us a little like explanation of art therapy and why you love to do it and how this applies.
Yeah, well, a lot of people don't know what art therapy is.
I do not.
Yeah.
So talk to him like he's 6 years old.
Tell me.
So I've had people say, so you take clients to the museum?
No.
Yes. And I've had people assume that I only work with kids, which is obviously not true if I work with couples. So I am a marriage family therapist, so I'm going to deal with relationship issues and, you know, depression, anxiety, the same way any psychotherapist would. Mm-hmm. But, you know, talking limits us because we're so good at talking. We've been talking since we were 2 years old, and we're good at it, and we know how to censor ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how to shut up, but I might
sometimes
know how to
we censor put our foot
myself.
In our mouth. But more often than not, we can censor ourselves.
Right.
And we just don't have that censoring ability with drawing or painting or sculpting because it's not something we do on a daily basis. So I might say to my client, why don't you draw how you're feeling right now? And just using shapes and colors and lines, just show me how you're feeling. Because sometimes we don't even know how we're feeling and we can't put it into words until we say, well, this triangle over here is kind of really distant from this square. Maybe I'm the triangle and maybe my husband's the square and we're just not connecting lately. And they might not know that.
Interesting.
Or have the words until they see it.
So when you're sitting with a couple and you start to suggest that, do you ever get just completely blank white faces like, what? I have to what? Some people are scared to draw.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know how to draw. I can't draw my feelings.
Drawing,
I mean, I can't.
Everybody's scared to draw.
Right?
Everybody. And,
okay.
And this is the weirdest thing, that we all think we're supposed to be able to draw photorealistically, and we haven't been taught how to do it. Like, I don't think I can sit down at a piano and play, you know, a sonata. Because
right.
I've never taken a piano lesson in my life.
Right.
But for some reason, we think we're supposed to be able to know how to do that with drawing.
Right. You're right. Oh. It's sort of like, well, if I don't know how to draw like that, then I really shouldn't draw.
Right.
I have no business.
Right, right.
Where that might be true with the piano.
No.
you might not want to torture everybody.
That's true.
On the piano.
Yeah.
With chopsticks for the 18,000th time.
So,
I
have the sketchbook in front of me, right?
Yes.
And it has a little diagram on it.
It's nothing fancy.
Nope.
Just a sketchbook.
Just
a
sketchbook.
Like spiral
bound. It says, how to be an artist.
Okay.
Make some art. Does it look terrible? Yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
You're an artist. Make more art.
Okay.
Yeah, there it is.
So there you go.
So, basically, people
Because the
say,
answer to, the on in the diagram, the answer to both yes and no is... You're an artist. Make more art.
Yeah.
Right.
So the resistance that I get from people.
I
constantly get resistance. I can't draw. I'm not very good at it. I can barely draw a stick person.
Right.
I have a lot of techniques that I'll use to get past that resistance.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'll plug my podcast now.
Okay,
because I have a video podcast that you can get on YouTube or iTunes called 3-Minute Art Therapy. And one of... the topics of one of the podcasts is, what do I do with the client who's resistant? How do I get them to make art, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes I'll take drawing out of the equation. So I'll have them hammer nails into wood, or I will give them some clay, or I'll have them build something three-dimensionally. So there's not that fear of drawing.
Right.
Right. And here's the bottom line is that I don't take insurance. All right. So people are coming to me and they pay privately and they say, why should I make this art? I'm like, well, why are you paying me? You're here because you have a problem.
Uh-huh.
Whatever you've done so far isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
You want to do something differently. So let's try a different approach. So we're going to draw, or we're going to paint our feelings, or we're going to work together and build something
are
new.
They pay- I, so the art because art seems to me like some is informed so much by the subconscious if you get lost
absolutely
in it. So yeah. Is that what you're looking for, is those clues? Because if you're saying draw your feelings, yeah, that sounds like what's the literal way to draw your feelings? You kind of have to let yourself go and just let your subconscious take over a little bit when you're doing
it? It can be. I mean, it could be a very open-ended, like draw your feeling. Or it could be more specific, like draw your relationship or draw, you know, somebody who's coming in with physical pain, I might say, draw what your pain looks like. Where is it in your body and what color is it? And what happens is, you're absolutely right, the subconscious takes over.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't read somebody's artwork. That's the other misnomer.
Right, you're not. You're not.
I'm not interpreting.
You're not
it.
Now going to interpret and
analyze
it.
Yeah, it's not
it.
Like
right.
Tarot cards.
Right. Right. Well, one of the ways that I've worked with clients is to help them get into their body and find the truth of their feelings mm-hmm. through their body. Mm-hmm. And this is another access.
Absolutely.
Right? This is another way to get to the truth of your emotions, because that right there is what's going to help you in your interpersonal relationships.
Absolutely.
Knowing what you're dealing with.
Yeah, and knowing what triggers you and how you react to it and all that.
Because everybody thinks they know their feelings. They think they know what they're feeling. I'm just angry all the time. Well, it's interesting because anger is sort of the one emotion that is socially acceptable, let's say, for men. But they might actually be scared, or they might actually be sad, and they might be pissed off that they feel sad or scared.
Mm-hmm.
And women, you know, tend to cry because we get sad when we feel ashamed or we feel scared
or
angry. when we feel angry.
Yeah.
We often,
yeah,
men get sad, they get angry, women get angry, they cry. You know, it's this, you know,
is that societal or is that?
Well, I would imagine there is an equivalent in most societies.
In most cultures,
there is an equivalent. It might not be forgive me if I'm not explaining this correctly, but I know in the Japanese culture there is, I can't remember the name for it, but you're actually allowed to sort of have a tantrum. Like it's almost a controlled tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
mm-hmm,
this is your time to go just be angry and freak out,
mm-hmm,
you know, but the rest of the time you're supposed to hold your shit together,
yeah,
at all times.
Yeah.
And so I do think that most cultures, whether how we handle, whether what we're taught or not applies to all cultures, probably not. But I would imagine that most of them have kind of emotional rules and boundaries.
Right.
You know, and so when you're in relationship, you're only dealing with the external emotion within the argument, the relationship, and this is this path to finding the true emotion that's going on.
Well,
underneath.
Hopefully,
in a
so,
sense,
you know,
another
we'll
door.
We'll take a look at the problem and the, what do you want the goal to be, and how do we get from one to the other? Well, you know, it's interesting what you said about the Japanese having this tantrum.
Yeah.
Thing. Because anger and depression and anxiety, you know, most of our emotions, they're very physical. They're physical things, and we feel them in our body physically,
oh,
right?
Oh, sure.
And the art, being engaged in some art process, you're doing something physical. So, I mean, mm-hmm, if you're drawing, yeah, you're moving your hand around a little bit, it's physical. But like I said, if I can give somebody a piece of wood and have them start hammering nails into it, or
yeah,
take clay and bash it on
it's
the table.
It's kind of gestalt.
Yeah, it's kinda really great. I have people rip up paper. Mm. So sometimes I'll have them take a piece of paper and with a big Sharpie marker just write all kinds of curse words and everything that's making them mad. And then they just rip it up and shred it up, and that's getting that angry energy out.
Right.
But then I have them take those scraps of paper and create a collage out of it, because you have to take your destructive feelings and rebuild from them.
Ooh, I kind of got goosebumps about
that.
Yeah,
that's
kind of cool.
It's fascinating. And people are like, but it says, you know, I could still see part of this curse word in my collage, and I don't like that. And I'm like, well, that's life.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to start with a clean slate every day. You get, you know, you have to start with the crap and build up from there.
Right.
Right.
And you have to take the crap, and sometimes you see it and sometimes you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so
or I would imagine you take the crap and kind of compartmentalize it here and there, right?
Sometimes.
Or maybe it's attached to
something. Or you get resentful about
it. Then there's that. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So if you're I mean, I would admit, obviously, if you're working with a couple, you one approach might work with one and one with the other. Do you sometimes see them separately to sort of have them go through that process, or do they ever do it as homework?
I don't usually give homework because most of my clients won't do it.
Yeah.
And then they feel guilty about not doing it.
And you get a whole lot of
And
then all the art is about not having done the art.
Now I'm inadequate because I haven't done the art.
Now I'm going to get detention for not turning my homework.
That's just a spiral.
Yeah, terrible.
Downwards.
Yeah, don't do that.
But I want to share with you an interesting process that I'll do with couples. I have a picture here I'll share with you.
Cool.
It's something that I call ambidextrous art.
Oh.
Okay. And it was originally developed by Raymond Lane in the late 1990s. He was working with people with severe brain damage to one side of their brain. So ambidextrous art, or ambi art, I call it, you draw with both hands at the same time. Okay, so you can see these pictures of like flowers or something where one side is pink and one side is blue. And so you have a marker in each hand and you draw together at the same time.
Okay.
And what you're doing is you're having, you're connecting both sides of your brain. So you're balancing that out a little bit because sometimes people tend to be more left brain and some people tend to be more right brain. And somehow in relationships, we always find the opposite person to be with.
Wound attraction.
Which is, it's that, but it's also good because that person balances us out, right?
Yes.
But it does make a problem for communication a lot of the time.
It really can,
So what I'll do
is... And this is how you grow.
Yes. If you don't kill your spouse first. Yeah.
No, we'll have none of that.
Well, then you go to jail.
None of that here on MILF Talk. It's a happy show, damn it.
No, we don't kill
him.
Okay. No killings.
So what I do is I will demonstrate how to draw with both hands at the same time, and each couple will have their own piece of paper and a marker in each hand, and they'll copy me, right? So we'll do some brain balancing. I call it bilateral brain connection.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I do is then I will have one of the couples be the leader. So they draw, and their partner has to copy their drawing.
On the opposite thing, finish the flower kind of?
They'll each have their own piece of paper. So they're still drawing with both hands, but one person's saying, okay, I'm going to make a circle, and then the partner says, okay, I have to copy your circle.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we talk about what's it like when you're in control and when your partner's in control. Do you like being a follower? Do you like being a leader? What's more comfortable for you? And then what I'll do is, again, I will be the leader. I'll draw something, and they have to follow me. But one of the partners is the right hand, and one is the left hand. So now they have to work together. They have to be drawing on the same piece of paper together. And if they're both right-handed, then somebody's dominant and somebody's non-dominant, right?
Mm-hmm. And somebody's probably pissed off about it.
Yes, because yours looks better than mine, and I'm not comfortable with it. And then that all creates this really interesting dynamic to talk about. You know, whatever's coming up for you while you're drawing is probably what's coming up for you in your relationship.
Very much so. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see this on the dance floor with couples who are learning how to dance.
Yeah.
Because
in
this situation, generally, the man needs to lead. And in many of these cases, well, I would say 98% of them, women will say, I can't follow. I just can't. And it's like, well, that's going to be interesting. So it's pretty fascinating.
Right.
I always say what's going on the dance floor is a metaphor for the relationship in many ways, because it challenges you in that way to be out of your comfort zone and all of those things.
Absolutely. So it's absolutely the same thing with the drawings.
If it's me, what goes on the dance floor is like really dorky and spazzy.
Well, that is kind of a metaphor for your relationship,
isn't it?
Yeah, I
guess so. Dorky and spazzy. Yeah, I guess you're
right. Let's get Hillary on the line, shall we?
And does she just stand and laugh at you then?
Kind of. No, she's sweet about it. Other people laugh. Other people on the side.
Which, again, might be. Your relationship.
That could be it. She's just taking care of a spazzy dork.
Well, I love these techniques. I feel like more people should utilize them in their practice, you know, because I do think people need to physically get out of themselves, you know. And also, I would think, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm guessing because I guess you could say mostly men, but I think everybody goes through this. When they know they're going to walk into an office and be asked about their feelings,
uh-oh,
I mean, this is intimidating, you know? So, I mean, I guess, are sometimes people almost relieved or kind of enthusiastic about the process because you're not telling them to speak about their feelings?
There's absolutely that layer. Absolutely. Yeah. Because while they're drawing or sculpting or painting or whatever, they don't have to make eye contact with me.
Oh, right.
Which is nice because they're busy.
Right. Yeah, they're busy.
And
everybody's comfortable.
And sometimes they're much more willing to just talk openly and chit-chat about things they wouldn't necessarily talk because they're not making eye contact. Right?
Oh, interesting. So they might chit-chat while they're...
So there's that layer. But then there's also, let's say I ask somebody to draw a tree, which is a very typical art therapy mm-hmm. intervention. So I'll say, draw a tree. It can be any tree. And once they've drawn it, then I don't interpret it, but I ask a lot of questions. So I might ask questions...
Because really, you say that's a shitty tree.
Yeah, I say, you know,
that
you
doesn't
suck.
Look anything.
A tree. You need therapy. Yeah, that's what I say.
Yeah, my 7-year-old can draw a better tree.
So we break
them
down.
And then they leave crying.
That is what
we break them down, yeah. Shatter them, and then build them back up from the childhood up.
Well, that just ensures that we have a job.
That's right.
Evil.
Evil.
No.
Okay. Now go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. So
they draw a tree.
I have a whole list of tree questions that I ask. And if anybody goes to my website, which is hayesarttherapy.com.
HAYES.
Okay. Yes. You can download a list of tree questions.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so there are things like, is it a real tree? Is it a made-up tree? Where does this tree live? What does this tree need? What does it provide? Is it healthy? Is it sick? Are there other trees around it? If they are they the same species of tree or different types of tree? So what happens is person's answering questions about their drawing, about their tree, but they're really answering questions about themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's so much easier to say, this tree is angry, or this tree is lonely.
Alone, yeah. This tree feels isolated and different
or
this all
tree,
those things.
Yeah. It's missing a branch, and it doesn't feel like every other tree around it. And
this tree is a terrible dancer.
Yeah. Spazzy.
Spazzy. This tree is very spazzy.
If it just didn't have those roots to hold it.
Everybody laughs at this tree. When it shakes its leaves. do you?
But it's absolutely, you know.
My leaves are a little chubby. Damn it.
Does this bark make me look fat?
My leaves are saggy.
And that just comes with age.
Oh, damn it. So do you ever ask people to draw each other?
This
seems risky, but I'm just curious, has that ever happened yet?
I don't have them to draw.
Maybe tomorrow?
Yeah, that's right. When I go into work tomorrow, we'll see how that
just
goes.
Just fuck with somebody.
I haven't done that because people get very intimidated by drawing people.
Yeah.
And again, they feel like it's supposed to be photorealistic. But I might have them draw your family as animals.
Hmm.
So
we
remove it a little bit. And it's very telling if one person in this relationship draws herself as a rabbit.
That's funny. I was going to say a bunny.
Were you going to say a bunny?
I was going to say a bunny.
And then the other person in the partnership draws that woman as a tiger.
Right.
You know, and so obviously she sees herself very differently than the other partner sees her. Yeah.
Sounds like you could get into trouble if you picked the wrong animal.
Yeah.
Why did you draw me as a duck-billed platypus? What is that about?
Yeah.
What is that
gorilla
about?
Has a really big ass. What should I take from that? I'm not okay with that. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. You know, I did an exercise in grad school. It was a Jungian exercise where it was actually a dream interpretation, but it involved drawing. It involved drawing the snapshot of your dream. Are you familiar with this exercise?
Well, Jung was one of the first people to have his clients draw.
Oh.
So art therapy
I love
goes
that
back
guy.
That far.
He's my hero. Yeah. I love that guy.
Between Jung and Anna Freud, they were the first like real pioneers of the art therapy
really?
World.
Really? I didn't know about Anna Freud.
Yeah, she always had the kids she worked with draw.
Oh, fantastic.
Aww. So anyway.
No, sorry. Okay, little psych history. And it was a I always volunteered for shit like this in class. Oh, I'll do it. Like Monica from Friends. It was like a quadrant. You would take the snapshot of your dream and then break it into a quadrant.
Okay.
And it was It was like mother, father, self, God, or something. The quadrants represented different things, and you didn't know where you were going to, you know, what you were drawing when you were drawing this. And boy, was it accurate. It was incredible. It was sort of like, this part of the drawing represents your mother, this part represents your father, this part represents God in the situation, and you know, the fourth. And it was a fascinating exercise. Really, I never, it, I was like, oh, it really gave me some insight to a certain that nightmare that I always had, you know.
You know, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I still watch my clients have those aha moments. Yeah. They do a drawing, and they're like, wow, that makes sense. Or I didn't know I felt that way, but now I see it in the drawing, and and I'm still amazed. How
is that ever misleading, though? That like a feel, they think the drawing is one feeling, and it's really something else, and they got confused. Does that ever happen?
Probably.
Yeah,
but yeah. I don't really have an example of that.
Yeah. I was just curious.
It might, you know.
Because there is a certain level of interpretation happening, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're interpreting their work.
They're interpreting their own work, because if I were to interpret somebody else's work, I'd be putting my own experience, my own likes and dislikes, and what kind of mood I'm in today. But I didn't sleep well last night. I'm in bad mood, right?
Yeah. This obviously means you're overworked, overtired. No. Yeah.
I see people do that. They want to interpret other people's artwork.
Like, oh, that must be interesting. So, like, if you know, if you got to know it all in the relationship, you're like, oh, well, your picture means that.
Yeah. And well, I had that happen with a mother-daughter.
Oh, God. Oh my God. God.
It was terrible.
Oh God.
Yeah. And so
I'm having, I just, my,
I assume it was the mother interpreting the daughter's art.
Yes.
Not
of course. So this young girl, she's 14 years old. She's got all kinds of anxiety all over the place. She's pulling her hair out of her head. And she and I were just doing a safe place drawing, just making her feel comfortable and safe. So she drew, it was like mountains and the ocean. It was a lovely picture, right? Mm-hmm. we talked about it, you know, what would it feel like to sit in this place? And can you slow down your breathing and imagine yourself in this place? So we were doing a whole guided visualization around that. And then at the end of the session, Mom comes into my office. She'd been waiting in the waiting room. Mom comes in my office, you know, to make the schedule and pay me and all that. And she looks at her daughter's drawing. She goes, oh, do you know what that is a drawing of? And she proceeds to tell her daughter and me where that's located and who's been there and what it's about. And
wow.
Yeah, and it had nothing to do with that.
And again, part of the process. Yeah. You're like, okay, now I know what your problem is.
Exactly. That is exactly what the problem was, that the mom was completely controlling this child.
And not curious.
And not listening to her.
Not listening, exactly. Not curious, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a big part of, well, any relationship, not just a parent-child relationship, but is to have that curiosity about each other.
Yeah.
You know, and to just sort of paste on all of the layers according to you. Yeah. Just a little narcissism right there.
There you go.
And you're like, the next session, you're like, okay, so you need a job and you need to move out. No.
And she's 14. Yeah.
Just kidding. So would you, in that situation, do you think you might have her mom come in with her at some point and do anything?
Yeah. So sometimes I'll have parent-child work together, or whole families work together.
Boy, that'd be interesting to have them do the right-hand, left-hand kind of draw together kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Also, sometimes I'll purposely give couples or families a challenge. Like, I might give them a piece of paper that's a little too big for the table. Like, how do they solve that problem? Because if you were to ask somebody how they solve problems,
they don't know.
They have no idea.
No, they're like, what do you mean? Yeah. Like, what's up, math problems?
So I want to watch. I want to watch how they work together. So oftentimes with couples or families, one of the directives I might give them is draw an island. You know, who's on the island? What would you bring to the island? All that. And so
Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
Sorry. Do you want to bring Pierce Brosnan to the island?
We're talking about family therapy. I'm sorry. Hi.
It would be Bradley Cooper for me.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah. I don't know if he's... So, okay. Yes. Yeah, so solving problems, family solving problems. Yeah. Yeah.
So sometimes we'll have couples or families who one person is like, okay, you're going to draw this and you're going to draw this and I'm going to draw that. And so you see the dynamics right. of who's the leader and who's the follower. Or other times you'll have families who all draw in their own little quadrant. Mm. So they don't interact mm-hmm. at all.
I wonder if you get that a lot these days.
Well, then
just the way people live, you know, people really kind
of because of the technology and all that.
Yeah, people kind of go to their own quadrants in the house, you know.
More with teenagers.
Yeah, if there's four family members, there's 8 to 10 rooms in the house. You know, I mean, it's really you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting.
Could be,
you know.
But then you get the enmeshed families where somebody draws something and like you have somebody else drawing right on top of it and they're like, let me change that for you. And then
Wow.
So it's really interesting to watch the dynamic. So it's a lot of art therapy isn't necessarily about that final product that you make.
It's no, it sounds like it's process. Not really at all. I mean, not. I shouldn't
Sometimes
say at all, but
is,
I mean, it's so much of that is about the process.
It's about the process.
And
have you ever, a person's done such an amazing piece of art that you've stolen it and put your name on it and sold it to like a museum or something?
Absolutely.
Oh, great.
Sotheby's.
Yeah. Okay, good. Nice.
Yeah.
Make some stationery out of it, sell it on Etsy.
And I'm just making t-shirts. Yeah. I'm just hoping they don't find out.
Cafe Press, Hayes.com.
Yes,
that's a nice, nice tote bag you've got there.
That looks
Pamela.
Familiar.
Mm. Yes.
But yeah, I actually have some clients are very good artists, and I find it actually harder to work with people who are artists.
Oh, I bet.
Because
they take too much time?
Not necessarily that, but it's already their language.
Right.
So it's not as raw and vulnerable.
So they might be the hammering the nails thing.
They might be doing that.
And they might be censoring themselves in a certain way to make better art.
To make it look good.
Right, because they know what yellow means to them or what, you know, they might have that understanding. Maybe they'd be better in dance therapy.
Right, right.
or music therapy or something. Mm-hmm. But I do have one client who, she just wants to come in and make art. She wants to come and have a quiet hour to herself with me just sitting there, and sometimes we talk and sometimes we don't.
Interesting.
Yeah, and she just wants to make art because I think she is an artist, but she doesn't always give herself that time. Mm-hmm. So she has to pay me to come into my studio and
Well, that makes sense. It's like sort of like going to the gym. Some people can't work out at home because they need that external like pressure.
The motivation.
Exactly.
That's brilliant, Todd.
That's a good metaphor.
That's
I like
a really
that.
Good metaphor.
Oh,
no, I like that because it is. It's like I'm doing this for myself, but I don't give myself permission to do it for myself unless I'm in this other space with this other person. Yeah.
And
that's interesting.
And every once in a while she'll bring up like, oh, I had this, you know, bad dream or I was feeling anxious the other day or you know, whatever. She'll sometimes bring it up. And sometimes we spend 45 minutes in silence.
Wow.
And sometimes that's just nice to be in the same room and be present with somebody else. And while she's...
Yeah, so you're not like sitting there texting your friends. And
No, while she's drawing, I'm drawing too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so we're, you know, on the same page.
Yeah,
not
so
literally
to speak, but not
drawing
literally.
On the same page. But, but we're you know,
in the same...
shared experience.
Yeah. Nice. That's very cool.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different... levels to it in a lot of different ways it can be used.
Well, I really, I'm fascinated by how you work with couples utilizing art therapy. I think it's brilliant. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes me want to do it.
Let's do it.
So we're going to do something kind of fun and different. We're going to do a little MILF quiz.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
MILF quiz.
The MILF.
This is the first time ever.
What do
MILF
I,
quiz,
what,
right?
What do I get if I pass?
This is history.
If I win?
No, there's
no... Do I get
no
your
right
voice
wrong.
On my home answering machine?
Oh, sure.
That was a little NPR reference.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right, so are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, take a deep breath. It's going to be really difficult.
I didn't study for this quiz.
Maybe she should draw her answers.
No.
I should.
Oh, I know. I wish this was like a video podcast, and then that would be useful for people. Otherwise, you'd have to listen to me describe all of the drawings.
It's
and
like
you don't
a play-by-play. It's like listening to sports on the radio.
That's true.
That's
true.
No problem.
I know, which just made me think of Derek Fisher, who's going to coach the Knicks. That's so cool.
I know.
You're so excited about that.
I love Derek
Fisher.
I do. He's just the bomb.
More than Pierce Brosnan? In a different kind of
okay,
love.
Okay, that's a different question. This is a different kind of love. Okay, first word that comes to mind when you hear MILF.
Sexy.
What turns you on creatively?
Seeing other people's creative endeavors, like going to a museum or a dance or just being at someone's house and they have awesome paintings on the wall.
Makes you want to run home.
It makes me want to paint. Like,
thanks for the cocktails, but I got to go home.
Yeah, paint. I got to go paint.
Yeah, that's kind of, what turns you off creatively?
When people tell me how I'm supposed to do things or how they're supposed to look. Or being on a deadline, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you have to get this drawing done by whatever.
Oh. Interesting, because sometimes that can inspire me.
I'm the opposite, yeah.
You need a deadline.
If I don't have a deadline, I'll be like, I don't need to do that.
You're never going
to
get that done.
I don't have to do that.
I probably need a deadline sometimes.
Yeah.
I force myself, like I give myself deadlines, and that works for a while. But then eventually, like I'm giving myself these stupid deadlines. I don't need to do this.
What's going
to
happen if it doesn't happen?
You can't really trick yourself after
a while. No, after a while,
I know. I have to put in consequences. You know, some sort of consequence.
Pay yourself.
You know, it's like anyway. No, this isn't about me. This is about you.
All right.
What do you wear when no one is looking?
What do you wear when nobody's looking? My God.
Like when I go to bed? I don't know. Probably a t-shirt and boxer shorts.
Oh, okay. Nice.
There it is. Yeah. It's fair.
What sound or noise do you love?
Well, I can tell you what I hate.
That's next.
All right.
Let's go with love.
We start positive and then we go negative.
I love the sound of my children genuinely laughing.
The gutter,
I know that's like when they're having a genuine, like deep from
guttural
the soul
laugh.
Yeah. And I'm just like, that is the best sound. Or when the whole family's sitting at the table and like everybody's just
busting
laughing,
up,
laughing.
That's
know?
The best.
Just being idiots. At
I
the
agree.
Table.
Yeah. I agree.
I would have to completely agree with that. And every once in a while, my daughter will have that kind of guttural laugh, and it'll sound just like it did when she was a baby.
Oh.
You know, because every once in a while, when they're babies, they'll give like this. Big giant, like
that's so
you know,
funny, yeah.
So cute. What is your what sound or noise do you hate?
Bagpipes.
Oh,
bagpipes?
My God, I hate the sound of bagpipes.
Really?
Yeah, I'm sorry to any of the Scottish people out there, but
I love the bagpipes.
It turns my stomach.
They're a hit or miss kind of instrument.
Are you Scottish?
Partially.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do like Celtic music quite a bit, but bagpipes. Have to be played perfectly or they sound like awful.
Or
maybe you haven't heard angelic bagpipes.
You just don't.
Maybe you've only heard bad bagpipes.
But maybe it's like an acquired taste, like gefilte fish. You know,
something like that.
It's like an acquired taste.
I can only listen to them for like a minute or two. Yeah. You know, and then I'm like, okay, that's enough. what is your favorite curse word?
Oh, my favorite curse. Ah, fuck.
Fuck. That's the best one.
Does "ah" always come before it? Ah, fuck.
No, there's a lot of different.
Okay, because you just said, ah, fuck.
That was
I thought maybe it was part of it.
Yeah.
All right.
Number one celebrity on your hump island?
Oh, well, I already said Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper.
He's playing a raccoon this summer in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay, right. I probably won't be seeing
nice
that
plug place for Bradley Cooper. Thanks, Todd.
He's just got those eyes.
Yeah.
Very sexy.
He's very pretty. He's a pretty fella.
What profession would you not like to do?
Probably be an orderly at a hospital.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Good answer.
Yeah.
Seems
not nice.
No.
Doesn't seem
we don't
good
even have to go into detail on that. Let's just move on to the next question.
Leave that alone.
As fast as possible.
Yeah.
What is your favorite song to sing in the shower?
Oh, I don't really sing in the shower. Oh, no, that's not true. I was singing
everybody
in the shower today.
Everybody sings in the shower.
Oh, my God. So, all right. So, here's the deal. When I work out, and I come home, and I usually have some almond milk after I come home.
Okay,
all right. Sure.
All right.
This is
I'm gonna
leading
add a question
to the answer.
What do you drink after a workout? Okay.
And preferably chocolate, but I didn't have chocolate today.
Oh, that stuff's good.
And so I get the Almond Breeze.
Uh-huh, yeah, I get
and
that.
Every time I look at Almond Breeze, I think of that 70s song, Summer Breeze.
Oh, yeah, by Seals and Croft.
Breeze. Yes, and so oftentimes in the shower, that song is going through my head because I just had my almond breeze.
Oh, yeah.
So she sings the song Almond Breeze.
Almond Breeze.
It doesn't roll off the tongue the same way. Yeah. All right. Glad to know that about you. And
you just want to picture me in the shower.
Singing.
I know.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's fair. I don't know.
Well, who wouldn't?
We're talking MILF here. So,
yes. Yeah. So I'm favorite song to sing for karaoke after two drinks.
I've never sang karaoke.
Oh, no.
Young lady.
We have something to do.
We have a date.
We're going to do karaoke.
Yes.
But my husband used to go out with friends and sing karaoke, and he would choose the most difficult song. It's The End of the World.
As we know it.
Yeah.
No, I Feel Fine. Yeah, that's
because
like really
it
fast
has
talking.
Like really fast talking. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. I think he only sang the chorus.
Yeah,
just kind of garbled the rest of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't sing more than five notes. Then we
have
to pay
you see
for
how
it.
I
Thank
cut
you.
Myself off. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Done.
Okay, and then the classic: if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Oh man. That I contributed while I was on the earth. That
nice.
I did something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you are.
I hope so.
We're just going to get that. I mean, I'm not God,
so.
But I'm going to just say, you are.
You are. It totally. Seems like you are.
All right. Well, thank
you. If God doesn't say that to you, then he's being a dick.
I think sometimes that might happen.
Just to mess with you. I mean, he's got to have a sense of humor.
Yeah. Well,
right?
He's a twisted.
Yeah. There you go.
Twisted.
All right.
Fella.
So, That's our show for today. We're going to do another one. Thank you, Pamela, for being here.
You're
and
so
thank you,
welcome.
Todd.
Thank you.
Just for everything.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I really contributed a lot. And God will tell me I did.
Yes.
You're going to do okay at the pearly gates. If you want to check out Pamela's art therapy website, go to Hayes Art Therapy. You can kind of search everything under that, YouTube, iTunes. Look for the 3-Minute Art Therapy video podcast, and that's 3, the number 3. And also is it a YouTube show called
it's
The Science of Happiness?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And she was interviewed for that, for one of those episodes as well.
One of the episodes.
Right?
Can
cool.
art make us happier?
Yeah, I think
was,
it can.
Yes. I was the art therapist that they turned to
you
to answer
expert.
That question. The
so
expert.
So cool.
Yes.
I know an expert. You can find me on Facebook as Sophie Venable, and you can follow my occasional tweets and find out what's coming up on MILF Talk on Twitter at MILF Talk. And if you need a good gift for someone, a bottle of wine and my book is a good one. You can find MILF 101 on Amazon.com. And the wine, you're on your own. Thanks for listening today.
Bye.
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 If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.